Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. I have to be with you, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. It kind of, this new theme music almost reminds me of Rat. I don't know if you remember Rat. or any hair band of the 80s, I guess you could insert there. Lots of stuff to talk about this afternoon, and some of it disturbing as we deal with some of these issues, some of it uplifting. One of the uplifting things, Pope Francis, with this 30th anniversary of this World Day of Prayer ecumenical gathering that got Saint John Paul II in hot water with those who were more Catholic than the Pope back in his day, and continues to be the case, it seems, with Pope Francis. We'll get into that discussion this afternoon. And also, on the disturbing side, possible ISIS attack or inspired attack. We'll get into that with this attempted beheading that happened. All of that and more. Stick around. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. With the new heavier music. It's almost Motley Crue-like. I think it's more Motley Crue than Rat. I said Rat, but I don't know. Back for More. We remember that one. The Rat classic. I liked Rat. I thought they were cool. Them and Motley Crue, right? I mean, come on. Who didn't love those guys back in the day? Speaking of back in the day, got disturbing information regarding my alma mater, Eastern Kentucky University. Apparently planning to cut some programs, two of which I have to really believe shaped who I am as a professional. And it's sad to see that go, and disturbing at the same time, because journalism, one of the courses, and theater, another, French, apparently, they're considering getting rid of, geography, who the heck needs that when you got Google Maps? Right? And GPS. You got, you know, geography. Come on. You got Google Earth, man. Journalism, who needs that? Who needs that when there's Facebook? Because we're all media professionals with that. In theater, I mean, come on. There is YouTube. So oh, and French, right, there's Rosetta Stone. So obviously there's solutions for all of this stuff. We don't need anything else. Math and science, however, no substitute. You gotta have that. That's gotta be taught on the university level. Because nothing will get you there. Even though you can pretty much learn anything the heck you want from a YouTube video anyway, so why even have school? Why even have college? Who needs it? Can all be educated, self-educated. Get by just fine watching the YouTube videos, figuring it out. We can repair our own dishwashers. Maybe get into a little bit more difficult stuff like auto repair. Perhaps brain surgery. It's all right there. The knower of all knowledge, I say, the YouTube video. So why have any college program? My goodness. I mentioned this on Facebook. You'll see the post and the thread on a friend's page, but still, yeah, I haven't gotten over it. Quite frankly, I'm still bitter with David DeLighton, even though he's apparently out of the woods on any sort of potential charges for what he did. And again, it's not that I care what he did as an activist. I say go on with your bad self. Go on with your bad self. If you're an activist, do your activist thing. Dig as deeply as you want, as undercoverly as you want, if that's a word. Undercoveredly. Do whatever you want to do. But call yourself an activist. Say, yes, you know what? I am. I am an activist. That's what I do, and that's why I was doing this stuff. Right? Wear that badge proudly. Do not come in and say, well, I'm just like all of those other journalists out there who will do any darn thing that they please to get the story because, you know, that's what those journalists do. They'll go out and pretend to be people they're not. They'll go out and secretly tape and expose individuals. No, we don't. No, we don't. No self-respecting journalist does that, mind you. And did I get that from my experience in the industry? No. Honestly, no. I got that in the very beginning with the foundation that I had in college with the right curriculum and the right professionals leading me who really didn't want me doing stupid stuff. Didn't want the industry tarnished by doing stupid stuff. This was instilled. As deeply and foundationally as anything possibly could be, ethics, journalistic ethics, were there. Now, you can have a platform. There are plenty of people who do. There are plenty of people who have a massive platform. There are those in the blogosphere who have millions of views and reads and followers, and that doesn't mean they have journalistic integrity. So who's going to stand up for this, what I believe to be one of the most, and I'm biased, I'm going to admit my bias as I say this, but one of the most socially responsible professions of them all, right? I mean, this is the kind of stuff, and it may sound crazy because I'm sure, and maybe I don't know, I only studied a couple of disciplines seriously, but my journalistic training was that you have the most intense degree of responsibility of anyone. Because you could be shaping culture. You could definitely be shaping behavior. And one of our biggest lessons was the War of the Worlds broadcast, the famous Orson Welles broadcast, where there were those who heard this and thought, this is real. It was a radio drama, but it was thought to be an invasion. And there were those who reacted with all sorts of negative responses because of this. And it was one of the cautionary tales back in college of you don't do stuff like this. You don't lead someone astray just because you can. So, you know, there's this, where are you taught that? Where do you have the opportunity to have these real foundational, formational experiences? It's in that college education. So it's a shame to see that. I pray that there will still be good journalism schools and there will be great journalism professors. And there will be those who are really concerned about content and integrity and ethics. But it's a shame to see a proposal of this going bye-bye at my alma mater, right? Because of everything that I studied, and I did theater. I studied theater. I didn't only perform in theatrical productions, but studied the craft, studied music. But it's the responsibility. You know, you can, and I'm not making light, believe me, because they're noble professions as well. But as a musician and an actor, there are those who won't necessarily take you as seriously as if you were a journalist, right? Because now, well, you must be telling the truth, or you must be presenting this with the deepest degree of integrity. And you're respected, and as well you should be. And then, of course, we've had those disgraceful situations. Brian Williams comes to mind, where there's this unfortunate stretching of the truth that has come back to bite him and bite those who do things of this nature, to the point that, well, you've lost that integrity. Right? You can be as opinionated as the day is long. You can have deep-seated convictions, but don't let someone hear you stretch the truth. Really, don't embellish. Don't go down a path of thinking you have to make something sound better than what it is. No. Again, have your convictions. Have your passionate opinions. But don't do that. So again, it's disturbing. I think kind of a sign of where we are, and that we've kind of lost respect, or we just believe that, well, anybody could do that. That's one of my favorite, and I don't say this with any degree of arrogance. It's just, I love it. I honestly love it when somebody says, I need to have my own radio show or whatever. Yeah, I can do a show like that. And you know what? If that's what you think you can do, and maybe you can. Maybe you can. Maybe you have the chops. Maybe you got the chops. And I'm, again, not saying this with any degree of look at me. But I'm glad. You know, I'm glad the tightrope walker makes it look like anybody can get on that rope. I love that. I love the fact that the juggler makes it look like anybody can grab those clubs and just go to town with it. Don't you? I love it. It looks effortless. Wow, look at that. Look how easy that is. Yeah. I mentioned this before in college. Back to my college days, riding a unicycle around. One of my favorite things was being asked, can I ride that? By strangers sometimes. Certainly friends. Can I ride that? Which my response was, I don't know. Can you? We will see. Let's see. Let's see if you can. You're welcome to try. We need formation. We need foundational underpinning, and it's a shame to see that stuff go away. We'll be back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our friend of the show, Opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Back, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. Thank you for joining me. Follow me on Facebook. Pretty much everything we talked about over here, I have at least referred to or posted on my Facebook page, with plenty of opportunity for discussion. And that discussion is interesting, very interesting. kind of, as we grow with Breadbox Media, there's, you know, this stuff doesn't just happen. Nothing just happens. I'm sorry. Kind of what I was talking about in the last segment. Things may look easy and it's great. And if we can pull something off that looks effortless, amen. Praise God for that. Literally, praise God. It's grace that does that and hard work, grace and hard work. But there's something that we have to do as a for-profit company. We have to make money. We have to keep our doors open. We have to pay our bills. And the only way we can do that is by selling advertising, because we're a media company. That's what media does. It's what it's always done from the beginning, and that's what we do. So I was, you know, just venting a little bit of frustration, talking about how it's rare. It's honestly rare. It doesn't happen because most people are respectful, quite honestly. Most are very respectful. But from time to time, and I make sales calls. I do this. I call on businesses. I've done this for 13 years. I've made thousands upon thousands of solicitation calls. Sometimes it's donor calls, sometimes it's sales calls, but I am often on the phone asking for something. That's a huge, huge part of what I do when I'm not doing this. And it regardless of how many times it's happened, and it's happened enough, but again, rare, when I get that time where I am in mid-sentence just introducing myself and I get a hang-up, it's frustrating. And I always call back immediately, and rarely does someone pick up the phone when I do that, because I don't know. I mean, it could be a drop call. It could be. But that's what I always do. If by chance they answer, I just say, yeah, you know, I'm so sorry. And I make it my fault. I say, you know, my phone must have dropped your call. So, but as I'm venting a little bit on Facebook, interesting. I know that people don't want to be bothered. I get that. But, you know, if somebody's in business, you're selling something. And I happen to believe that you're selling something even if you're not in business. Even if you're not, you know, you've got to have something, unless you're the government, right? Which I guess at that point you still have to sell the office you have to run for, so there is that. But you do get to kind of impose your money making. You say, okay, you pay me your tax, and that's how we'll make our revenue. But for the rest of us, we have to do it the old-fashioned way. We have to sell something. We have to have something that is worth buying, worth investing in, and people have to take a chance on that. They have to purchase your products. And for media, it has always been advertising. That's what you do. But it's interesting, the aversion that's out there. It's almost as if I'm doing something disrespectful, right? Because I make sales calls. How dare you pick up the phone and call someone, Leo? Don't you know? We're entitled to our privacy. Why would you do? I had a guy come the other day to my door, and this happens in my neighborhood from time to time, and he's not the most professional-looking guy, and he wants to clean my carpets, which we have one carpeted room in the house, and it's not worth cleaning. It's the carpet in there is original, I think, to the house that was built in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. But the rest of the house is hardwood and cork floor, and so then he said, well, we can clean that too. And I said, are you trying to sell me floor cleaning, or what exactly? I just want to cut to the chase. What are you selling? I'm trying to understand. I know you're trying to sell. Are you trying to sell me a floor cleaner? Are you trying to sell me a service? And then he hands me this thing that says Kirby in it. I said, so ultimately you want me to buy a vacuum cleaner? Is that what you want? And he says, well, that's what we want to do this. And I'm like, okay, I'm not doing this to be rude to the guy. I just want to know, am I your prospect or not? Because I probably not. And I want to save you the frustration, which I'm not saying get the heck out off my porch. How dare you sell something? I really just want to know. And when I understood what he was doing, I said, sir, I'm sorry. We have a vacuum cleaner that we're happy with, and I'm just not going to buy that. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I sincerely apologize because I know what it's like to lose a sale, but I would rather somebody come out and just tell me, no, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. Because nothing is worse in a relationship, in a sales relationship, for me just to chase somebody and wonder, did they get the message? Did something disconnect along the way? Was there something? Because, I mean, I know how I am. I mean, my goodness, I may have a tremendous degree of interest. I may think that something is great, and just because I have so much on my plate, I forget that I've even thought something was great, because now I've got everything else stacking up, fires to put out, all the things that I've got to do in a day. And the thing that I wanted to do that I thought was really cool, it's gone. Like, I haven't even remembered it. So it takes reminders, and I appreciate those reminders. But generally speaking, I don't lead people along. Now, I may work and rework, and, you know, this is what I'm guilty of, especially in a startup. I've kind of thought we were going to go in a direction that we really couldn't, just because either systems changed or direction had to change. We had to be nimble enough to go, okay, you know, we can't do that, or I can't put $20,000 toward this program or whatever. I just can't do that. We're brand new, we're in startup mode, and it's lean. We got to stay lean. And, you know, so I've always got to assess and reassess and look at where things are, but I don't lead people along. I simply say, you know what, I'm sorry. No, it's not going to work. But I will tell you this. I love to be sold. I will let anybody pitch me anything because I always learn from those experiences. I can't tell you how much of what I do when I speak to potential clients I've learned from getting presentations. I love it. I love having that. I do a mobile DJ service on the side. Years ago, I got replacement windows installed in my home, and my wife and I went through, I don't know, the websites and looked at who we thought, and we had some friends who had had this done, so we got referrals here and there, and we had, I think, three of these guys finally came to our house. None of them would give us a price on the phone. None of us would even remotely suggest anything. They all had to come and look, measure, and then give us a presentation, which I thought was interesting. And as it turned out, we were down to two of the three. One, I was like, the other two, I was like, these kind of seem to be comparable products. But you know what? I went with a guy who I just kind of had developed the strongest rapport with in that presentation. So I thought, and this then I the light bulb dawned, you know, this is how I got to get gigs as a mobile DJ. This is what I've got to do. I can't just quote a price and hope for the best. I've got to have a consultation. I've got to sit down with people. I've got to say, you know what? It could range depending, which is true. It could range depending on what you need. I really need to walk through with you your event, see exactly what it is that you need, and then I can help you determine what that price is going to be. So when can we meet, right? And since I started doing that, if I meet with a potential client, it's a 98% close. And it's not because I'm pulling some sort of trick or doing something underhanded. I am actually building rapport with a potential client, truly getting to know what their needs are, showing that I can meet those needs with 20 plus years of experience doing this, and really can anticipate what it is that they may. They're doing it once, generally, right? They've got one wedding. God willing, one wedding, and I've done thousands. So there's something about coming to the table with that kind of expertise and go, oh, you know what, I've seen things of this nature before. Oh, you know, I know that room really well. And the number of times I've done that, we've done it this way, right? And I always kind of present scenarios and tell stories about things that I've experienced that were similar to what they do. There's nothing ignoble about that. There's nothing that is underhanded. It's just simply developing rapport, building the opportunity to serve someone. If you do that, you are selling, right? You may not realize it. You may think all I'm doing is meeting needs. That's what I'm doing. And this is how I operate. But that's how everything is done. That's how everything is done. There's got to be some degree of having a solution that someone is seeking, or at least they understand through you suggesting that there's a solution. And now you're willing to spend your money. That's how it works. That's what economies do. It's not bad. It's not bad. Greed is bad. Absolutely. Having a hoarding type of attitude that, you know, you wonder how you're going to build your barns big enough to hold all the stuff that you've accumulated, that's bad. But transactions, building relationships, creating those opportunities, good. It's good. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me over on Facebook. Leo C. Brown, that's where you'll find me, and we'll discuss all these topics as often as the case. So, interesting stories. I'd mentioned this, Virginia knife attack. FBI launches terrorism probe. Looks like it could be lone wolf action, at least with a ISIS-inspired attempted beheading. And, you know, when something of this nature crops up, we all get tense and we think, oh my goodness, you know, here it is again, what's happening? And I didn't get to post this, but I'm not sure what the source was, saying about how Russia has killed more civilians than ISIS, which, I mean, you know, you look at, there's plenty of things that have killed more individuals than ISIS, like slips in the bathtub. Certainly in the U.S., that's been a bigger issue. But still, when we hear this, we get bent out of shape and we think, okay, you know, we need to get rid of all of these Muslims. You know, I was at our state fair. I told a little bit of state fair story yesterday on the show, but was at the state fair over the weekend, and I'm literally getting kicked out of the place. Like, we're closing, or standard, you know, attention shoppers. Not that we were shoppers, but they were shutting down the convention center. We had to get the heck out. And on the way out, there was a table. And, of course, they had a big basket of candy, which it's me too, but my three-year-old has a ridiculous sweet tooth. As I say, he doesn't have a sweet tooth. All of his teeth are sweet. That's me too. Takes after me in that respect. But we stop for a moment to grab a piece of candy, and it's a couple of Muslim guys handing out free Qurans and then some other pamphlets and information. And I thought, well, you know, thank you. Thank you for at least being friendly and welcoming. And they're at least trying to change the rhetoric out there. They're trying to change the tone. We speak as frequently as you know, from with the Muslim Public Affairs Council. And I even asked, I said, are you guys familiar with them? And they weren't, but, you know, like every Muslim knows every other Muslim. It's one of those things like, ha, 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 yeah, you must know so-and-so, right? Which wasn't the case. But they were just very willing to be receptive and friendly. And not that I'm going to convert to the Muslim faith, but thank you for at least being out there and putting a positive spin on what is a feared, as we know, religion now because of everyone thinking that, well, the next thing they're going to do is behead us. And it's horrible that that's where we are. Now, 30 years ago, it was met with criticism, certainly because there were Muslims involved and really other faiths. It wasn't just because this was a Muslim thing. It was because it was more. It was an extra Catholic thing. It wasn't so Catholic exclusive, and it made those who were more Catholic than the Pope then very uneasy with Pope John Paul II doing what he did with this World Day of Prayer and meeting in Assisi with this ecumenical gathering of religious leaders from across the globe. And now the 30th anniversary of that first meeting, and it's been happening. We've hosted it every year since, but now a 30th anniversary of that with Pope Francis joining and now getting a little bit more attention than it has in the past, which undoubtedly it will get criticism because of the fact that how dare we Catholics do this, reach out, and try to build bridges, right? Because, you know, it was in Mass just a couple of weeks ago. When was it? This past week, week before, I lose track of time, where we had that challenging reading, "Do not think that I came to bring peace, but fire to the earth," and how I wish it was already burning, Jesus says. And he's like, not peace, but division. Walks through this very challenging proposal of family member against family member. And I think, because I've seen it in my own experience with some faith traditions that want to just latch on to that. Well, we're supposed to be divisive. No, Jesus doesn't say be divisive. He says he has come to bring division. There's a big difference there. Because unfortunately, what happens, and this is true, almost in every situation where someone embraces their faith enough to make an impact, for it to be obvious, right? As the old questions get, you know, do you behave faithfully enough to be convicted of the, or is there evidence? Is there evidence that suggests that you are who you say you are because of the way you live? And when you do that, I assure you, you do not have to create division. You don't have to bring some sort of marrow from the bone kind of slicing. You don't have to do that. You will not have to do that. By the very nature of you taking your faith a little more seriously, focused with a desire to abandon your will and seek the will of God, if that's what you do, there will be those who will oppose you. I promise you. You don't have to create it. You don't have to welcome that or suggest that, well, this is what Jesus wants, is division. No. Jesus wants us to be one. This is what his prayer is. But he knows that there will always be this immediate reaction to you taking the stand and taking the, and not because you've taken an aggressive stance, not because you're there being the antagonist, simply because you've taken a departure, right? You've taken a departure. And when you take that departure from whatever tradition, especially in families, I've seen it so many times and I experienced it myself, when you begin that road of departure, it's divisive. Like it or not, it's painful, right? It's painful because all you're trying to do is embrace this understanding that you've realized now is where you're called and what you know you need to do, and there's no, your intent is not to bring division into your family. But I watched this happen, right? 15 some odd years ago, when I was introduced to the Catholic faith through my wife now, who, when we were dating, took me to Mass. Next thing I know, I'm going, I don't understand this stuff at all. What do I need to do? So I finally have an understanding of RCIA and what that looks like. And then, lo and behold, as they say, I ended up Catholic. And for a Baptist boy who was an evangelical, a pretty serious evangelical, which was okay to be evangelical, it was equally not okay to be Catholic, because I had departed, right? I had departed from this path. And yeah, you know, my parents, God rest their souls, but the two times that I knew that I had disappointed my mother the most. One, crazy as it sounds, when I cut my hair the first time after growing it very long, would you think, what the heck? My mom was into rock and roll and that whole thing and wanted me to be a rock star. But when I knew I was going bald and had to cut my hair, it was disappointing. It was almost insulting. How dare you shave your head? I actually guess she thought maybe I was doing it for religious reasons then. But then becoming Catholic, it was the absolute most painful and challenging thing. Which is weird, because we had a neighbor growing up who was Catholic, who was the sweetest woman. And I really thought that my mother had a sincere respect for her. And, you know, but it was always this, well, that's what Catholics do, you know. Never in a real kind of, that's what Catholics do because they're really stupid. Or that's what Catholics do because they just don't have a clue, dear. Right? It was never that. But it was always kind of like, yeah, well, then Catholics do that. Yeah. Kind of like, oh, that's their thing. This is our thing. We need to be able to do our thing. They can do their thing. But never for it to intermingle, right? So when this happened, as it did, it wasn't that I needed to do anything, right? Never. I didn't need to bring division in. It happened. It just happened. So pray for Pope Francis, the World Day of Prayer, and pray that we all will be one, right? So we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.